ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hello everyone, welcome to the Attention Please podcast now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today, the topic for today's podcast is going to be the recent meltdown in the tech sector, especially the number of people, an almost unprecedented number of people laid off from some of the biggest companies in the world. Sometimes the hot Silicon Valley startups like Stripe, and also the foundational companies now, the often called FANG. It used to be called FANG, but then Facebook rebranded itself to Meta. So now it's called Mang, I guess, which again, the 90s guy, the moment you say Mang, it's Mang Meri Bharo, that Mamata Kulkarni song. So I was trying to not say that, but I have to, you know, I have to stay on brand at least. So It's depressing. It's sad to, you know, kind of log on to LinkedIn and see all these people, very qualified, you know, really great resumes. And, you know, they're looking for work. They're open to work. They're saying we have been laid off. Some people have been laid off while they're on paternity or maternity leave. Some of them, they're H-1Bs. Some of them are just fresh graduate students who just took this job and joined like 2 or 3 months. They've all been laid off. Now, many of them are, most of them, I would say, are a top technical talent, and they'll definitely land on their feet. So, of course, things look bad for them, but I'm optimistic about most of them. But again, if you're an H-1B, you have 60 days to get a job. So unlike an U.S. citizen or an U.S. permanent resident who can kind of stay, it very well might be, again, I'm not saying they won't get a job, but they might have to settle for a job which is, you know, not what they wanted to do. So they have to take a step back in their career. They might have to move. A lot of disruption. And the main thing is that you could say, well, this is par for the course in today's economy. But I'm not sure that most people understand the risk they're exposed to. I mean, I've always maintained that life doesn't really reward you for your ability or the amount of work you put in, but for the risk you take. And so it's important. And that's why I'm doing this podcast, is for those people who don't know, who think that working in a Google or a Facebook is like basically working for the Indian Railways, but with a whole lot of more of money. That's not the case. And why is it not the case? Because it's not that these companies have historically laid off people. They haven't. These companies have been solid. They make, most of them at least, Amazon and Alphabet, make a lot of money. I mean, they have profits. So why would they even do that? I think I saw a show where somebody was saying, again, this was an extremely naive statement, but many people might think so, was that, you know, Amazon spent $75 million on that Lord of the Rings reboot. Why if they could just have spend that money to keep these guys on their payroll and not fire them before Thanksgiving. And though it, you know, sounds, you know, why wouldn't they? There's a good reason why they wouldn't. And that's really what this podcast is going to talk about, why they wouldn't do that. So if you've seen the kind of messaging that's coming out from CEOs, and I've seen this from the CEO of Stripe, seen this from Jack of Twitter, and I've seen this from Zuckerberg, is that they say the same thing, that I'm sorry. First of all, I find this, again, extreme virtue signaling to the level of, you know, fakery to say I'm sorry after you've kicked somebody out like this. But anyways, this is what today's corporations are, you know, the wokeness and the virtue signaling. That's a topic for another day. Maybe they're related too, perhaps. So they said, we are sorry. We are sorry for growing too fast. All of them, three of them. And if you read my blog, which is basically this podcast written down, but with links, it's strange that, you know, three who you think are smart people would make the same mistake independently together. And it's really what Google is saying also, that everybody apparently grew too fast during COVID-19. And now they're having to rationalize. So, of course, one explanation is that all of them genuinely made this exact same mistake, despite being smart people and being supported by some of the smartest people in the world. Or you have the other option, that there's something much more devious going on here, something which was inevitable. And it's not that they mistakenly grew too much. They very knowingly grew too much. And this was all part of the plan. This is nothing, we didn't see this coming, as they maintain. Oh, they absolutely saw this coming. So in order to understand what I'm talking about, we need to kind of take a step back and look at what the old model of business was. And most of us have this idea of business, and it kind of ties in with the way we look at ourselves also, you know, in terms of we go out, we have an income and we have expenditure and we have savings. And when we go to the bank looks at the amount of savings we have, and they also look at our income and they give us a loan. They don't give us an insane loan, but the loan that they give is kind of tethered to what our savings are, so that they know that we can return the money. And we kind of think that modern business works on this principle, that it's just basically an extension of personal finance, and it isn't. People will say, you're naive for saying this, but I'm a Bengali, so that's my excuse here. But many people actually do. They actually think this is the way business works. And as a matter of fact, business used to work like this, honestly. It's not a question of naive. This is the way business used to work for many years, is that the amount of money that a company could raise, the leverage was basically based on its assets, stuff that it really owned, its retained earnings, and again, the number of customers that they currently have. So it's linked to its profitability, you know, how much profit it makes, and the demand for its products or its services. So if you're in the grocery business, how many people are buying potatoes and eggs? If you're in the pharma business, how many people are buying your drugs? So they were all linked to a tangible demand for your product. Obviously, many people are competing, so it's also a function of, you know, how much market share, which is linked to the amount of money you're currently making. And I think money, I'm not just talking about revenue, I'm talking about profit, because that's really why you're in the business, right? Now, this was the old model, but then the unholy marriage between Wall Street and Bay Area adventurers, they created a new model. And even those who followed the old model are increasingly moving to the new model. And that's the tragedy, unfortunately. But in the new model, here's the way the story went, is that all of this old model is good for if you're in the grocery business, or if you are in the business where demand is already established. But the real growth industries, the where we want to be, where the profits are, is you have to create a demand for something. People don't know that they want something. So in order to do that, in order to create the demand, you can't expect a company to immediately start making profits. So as an investor, you can't go and say, hey, what amount of money you're making. You may want to look at that. But if you just look at that, then you're being very short-sighted. You're really missing the real opportunity to make money. So what you have to instead measure is the potential for profit. Note how you went from profit to potential for profit. So how do you measure potential for profit of a company? Let's say you're making a product. So potential for profit is measured by growth. How the number of people who are buying your product or using your product, how many people and how is that percentage is increasing. So the growth, so the absolute number, and how it is increasing. Now you'd say, but what's different from that and from profit? Because if more people use your product, then that means you're making more money. But no, that's not the case. Because I might have paid for that, those people. I might have incurred an insane amount of capital loss to acquire those users. So as an example, let's say that I have a YouTube channel, the channel that you're watching if you see this on video rather than listening it on a podcast player. So this channel has about 1,200 subscribers. Now, this number has kind of been constant from the inception of this channel, which I think is more than a year or so. So I'm pretty sure that my market size for what I say is about 1,200. This is, if I was in this business for making profit, whatever profit I would have to make, knowing that I have a 1,200 users, which max will every year might change maybe 2%, 3%. But this is really how big I'm going to get. Now, if I was in the business of raising money in today's world, I couldn't do this. So what I would have to do is then I would have to take my own savings, you know, get money from my friends, and then basically start paying people to subscribe to my channel. Now, I'm not going to do this. I'm not hiding this. I'm not saying that I'm telling you, this is how I'm doing it. So I'm going to be burning, firstly, my savings. Then I'm going to take loans from my investors, the loans. I have investors. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to start buying users. So I will, and so every quarter, they will see how the number of subscribers of my channel are changing. So if I pay them, of course, 1.2K will be 12,000. Then it will be 1.2 million someday, pretty soon, because I'm paying people. Obviously, they will. But once I do that, some other good things will start happening. The Google algorithm will start promoting my videos because there are so many subscribers. More of these subscribers will leave comments, which will create more engagements, which will again prime the Google algorithm. So ultimately, the hope is I will attain genuine. So I pay for 1.2 million. And then I have 120 million at some point of time. And everybody after that is a genuine user who come to the channel because they're attracted towards it. And that's how you recover the money that you initially expended. This is the model. So again, to explain this, what my investors will be tracking is the growth in the number of subscribers and the absolute magnitude. They're not going to be tracking how much money I've spent to acquire that. So that's really the way, pretty much the way modern business was. So again, you have an idea. In this case, it was the YouTube channel. You develop a prototype. So what I have right now is a prototype. And you finance it from your own money. So your prototype then first acquires some users on its own, hopefully. So that's my 1.2K subscribers. Now, once I get somebody and say, hey, invest $100,000 in me. And so I'll possibly make the lighting better, have a better background behind me, not have those wires showing. So I'll do some things. And so this prototype will become a product. It will look much more professional. So I'll be spending some money. I'll also be spending some money buying users. Transparently, I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm buying users, which many people do for YouTube channels, by the way. They hide the fact that they buy users, but I'll say this is the cost. And again, when I make this infrastructure better, that's also cost to acquire a user. It's not necessarily my content is changing. My content is going to be same. So maybe better produced. So once I've acquired, so let's say I make this promise that by doing this, I have 1.2. Next quarter, this 1.2 will grow to 12,000. Fairly aggressive. There's no way this could happen if I don't spend money. If I just keep on doing this, it's never going to be 12,000. Never, not in a million years. So once I do that and I meet that growth target, the second round of investors will come in and they will say, well, you did a good job, man. This channel is like hot. Look at it. It went from 1.2K subscribers to 12,000 subscribers. So now they'll put more money in. Now, once they put more money in, I will use that money to return money to the guys who loaned me money initially. I'll take some money, put it in my own pocket, and then I'll play that game again. Now I have more money, so I can spend more on user acquisition. I can make this really jazzy. I can go to a studio. And then I will keep on doing this again and again and again. The expectation is at some point of time, I will organically grow, and then nobody will have to. I can stop playing this game, and I'll make a profit. But you guys have understood what the problem is. Very few will ultimately go on to make a profit. So most of them will be caught in this loop of taking money from the nth round to return money to the n minus oneth guy. This is really what the game is. So in order to do this, you have to continuously show growth, even at the cost of burning through insane amounts of money. Now, as an example, take the example of Twitter, which is very much in the news. So Twitter, in its about 11 years of existence, and I've forgotten the link to the data is in my blog post. It has lost money in, I think, 11 years. It has lost money in 9 years out of its 11 years existence. Imagine a company. Imagine you as a person who is in debt. For the last 10 years, 8 years, you were in debt, solid debt. In only two years, you had some savings. And by the way, if you just add the amount of money they've lost compared to the money gained, they have lost way more money than they have made out of the market. So Twitter as a concept shouldn't even be here, but it is. Somebody paid an insane amount of money. Of course, they paid much more than what it's worth, but they paid an insane amount of money, $44 billion, to acquire a company that has made only 2 years of profit in its 11 years, or 2 years of profit in its 10 years of existence. I've forgotten, but that's it. I think 2 years of profit in 11 years of existence. I think 2010 to 2011, not 2021, I'm not sure. Why does this happen? Just think about it. I'll give you another example. There's a company called Carvana, which had a publicity blitz during COVID. So what they basically sell is the ability to buy cars from home. So previously in the US, you had to go to a dealership, you had to look at cars. And they were saying, no, you don't have to do any of that. You just basically go online, order a car, and somebody drives the friggin' car to your home and you buy the car. I wasn't in the market to buy a car, but from what I understood, they paid an insane amount of money in customer acquisition, customer satisfaction, basically going the extra mile to make the car buyer happy. They said, we're going to revolutionize car buying. You don't have to go to a dealership and haggle, go to multiple places. It's very stressful buying a car, which I have bought here. It's like, spend the whole day. You first go, you haggle with the car dealer, then the car dealer will, basically say something, and then at the end they say, no, I can't do that. So you have to fight with him. They'll be like bargaining while you're signing the contract, and then once you do it, they'll try to add on some things, and you have to look at the contract. No, I'm not going to pay that. I'm not going to pay that. So it's just extremely stressful. They said, we're going to take all of that stress out and we're going to reinvent. Now, what they did was, again, and we'll come to that, Carvana is basically going out of business right now. And it was the same exact same thing. We grew too fast. So the reason why they're going out is they paid an insane amount of money to show that growth. An insane amount of money. And they've quickly ran out of money and more. So there's not going to be multiple rounds of N and N minus one. They have did it basically in one and two rounds. It's done. And this is also the reason, if you think about it, why Mark Zuckerberg is so gung-ho about the metaverse. Think about it. Metaverse, any rational human being will say, I read somewhere $30 billion or something he's putting into, it's not putting his own money into metaverse, by the way, Facebook's money. So why? Because with respect to Facebook, there is no buzz. There is no, it's kind of expanded to how much it will go at this point of time as a social media site. And it's all sorts of, nobody thinks it's not exciting. New kids don't like Facebook. It's all TikTok. Facebook is for people like us this age, which is not really the demographic that any social media company really wants to hit. So Zuckerberg has to show to Wall Street that he is moving beyond the social media. That's why they've totally rebranded. But it's obviously, as you understand, as most people understand, there's something going on, right? And there's something going on is he is selling something which is just, there's no technological capability right now. But it doesn't matter. All he needs to show is he needs to show growth. And he can keep priming the pump for a few more quarters and increase his wealth. That's really what the whole metaverse game is. Because he has to show growth. He has to show the buzz in the company, or people will just invest somewhere else. And that's really what Elon Musk is trying to do. He's trying to put the buzz back into Twitter, by the way. So as you understand, it's this N minus one guy recovers money from the Nth funding. And at some point of time, the guy at the end will be held holding the can, and obviously the employees. That's how it's going to end for 98 or 99% of these companies. Now, here we come to COVID, and where COVID provided, While COVID obviously destroyed many of the old world businesses that depended on the customer to actually come into the store, like bars and cinema theaters, COVID-19 was an amazing boon, almost a God-given boon to tech companies. Because people didn't leave home, they watched more Netflix, the number of users of Netflix grew, which is one of the companies in Hmong. And there was a huge burst in e-commerce, Amazon's revenue grew. So it allowed, once that happens, same with Carvana. This was the time when people actually couldn't go to the dealership. They actually had to have the car. So Carvana got a huge bump. companies like Carvana. I'm not picking on Carvana per se, but so once this happened, it actually allowed companies to meet their aggressive growth targets. So now companies could say, wait, we said we would do it. Bingo. It's done. Now, the moment that happens, when you meet your targets or exceed it, that means that the nth round of the investment is going to be huge. Now, you'd have thought that if they were honest, they would say, look, man, this is COVID-19. We're obviously not going to be able to replicate this moving forward. But they didn't. Nobody did. Because ultimately, everybody is gaining from this, right? You remember, the N-1 it invested is gaining from this. So what happened was, they made even more insane projections for growth. Everybody did that grew too fast. It's this. So they made insane, insane claims to get the next round of investment. And obviously, when this happens, executive management takes a lot of this, you know, the skim off the top. And again, depending on how, where you are in the apex of the pyramid, you know, that's your share of the take. So obviously, the decisions that a company takes are very much guided by what they can put into their pocket right now. So this is what happens. And then obviously, this couldn't last. So obviously, those growth targets were never going to be met. They knew this. All of them knew this, right? Now, there was another thing that happened. The war in Ukraine and everything, and inflation went off the roof, through the roofs, I'm sorry. So then the interest rates. The interest rate, so money, borrowing money from the market. Again, when people invest, they don't really invest their own money. They borrow from the market. And interest rates were like almost 0%. So you could basically get free money. You could borrow it. But now with interest rates went up, there was very little money. There was no cheap money lying around. So then people were, okay, hold on. Now we need to just be a little more conservative in our investments. Now, this is really where the problem is. Now, remember when they said we've grown this fast during COVID, we're going to grow even faster after this. In order to make that claim, right, you just can't say that in the air. You have to show that I am hiring more. So that means I have more capability. So I'm building up more capability to be able to support the growth. If I have the exact same manpower as I had, and I'm saying, I'm going to grow 300%. I said, how are you going to grow? Are you going to get people work three times, you know, 8 hours, 24 hours a day? How are you going to do it? So at that point of time, the third thing happened, which is the great leaving. You heard, a lot of you heard, you know, there's an absolute manpower shortage. People are leaving their old companies for double their salaries. And so companies are having great difficulty retaining their employees. So that's exactly what happened. In order to basically build capability, and this is where, you know, the cynicism of it comes in. There was no way that these people knew that these guys were going to be employed in the future. But at that point of time, they just needed to show their investors that they could hire and ramp up capability fast enough. So what they did was they paid an insane amount of money to hire an insane number of people. And this led to the great leaving of 2021. Which absolutely skewed the labor market, especially in tech. And now you can see what's happening. This is the downside of this. And it's not a mistake. This was done fully knowing that this was going to happen at some point of time. Now, how quickly? Maybe they didn't know. Maybe the war in Ukraine exacerbated that. But it was going to happen. Whether it's this year, next year, it was going to happen. So many people will say that, well, I understand what you're saying, but this doesn't work for, you know, a company like Amazon. What you're talking about is, you know, maybe Carvana or maybe some of the more upstart unicorns. But this is, I mean, Amazon, Google, they make profits. They have products, they make profits. So why are you talking about them? Why are you putting them in this bucket? You have to understand a little bit. Yes, it's absolutely true that Amazon does and Google or Alphabet does. But the thing is that these companies aren't really one company. They are multiple companies. They have multiple lines of businesses, some of which are very foundational and very old school and more conservative. Like for Amazon, it would be AWS, which provides infrastructure services for much of the internet nowadays. that is not the place that has been subject to layoffs. And I haven't seen anybody from AWS losing their jobs. But what they do is they use this business as a way to finance the riskier parts of the business. So they have some lines of businesses which are exactly like startups. For Amazon, for instance, it's their hardware business, their Fire tablets, the Alexa devices. And that's really where they have made massive layoffs. So these are exactly like small startups. So they're like think little units inside Amazon. So at that point of time, what happens is the Jeff Bezos of the world see that, look, we cannot justify the lack of growth of these startup-y things inside our companies keeping us from hitting the targets in other places. So it's not a question of, let me cannibalize money from Amazon Prime to pay for this. No, they can't, because if they do that, then that stifles the growth of Amazon Prime. That actually is basically throwing good money after bad. So what they do is they cut off the dead branches. And that's exactly what Amazon does. So if you are one of the persons who are unfortunate enough, and you don't know many people don't know when they go to work in a business, what exactly product they'll be supporting. If you're in one of those products that are part of the riskier part of the business, the more speculative part of the businesses, then your head is on the chopping block and you don't even know it. And again, as long as money is flowing and as long as things are going fine, it's okay. But the moment the money dries up, the moment the rounds of investment drive and Wall Street says, look, man, you're Amazon and you're making profit, but your profit rates are going down. Like Netflix, you still have users, you're still profitable, but the number of people subscribing to your service is growing on. That's when the alarm bells start ringing, because again, that is the metric that's tracked. It's kind of a metric of popularity. So that's why even the Amazons of the world will cut, and they will not use the money or the reputation, quote unquote, from their more foundational aspects of their business to maintain the story of growth of that part of the business for which they cannot craft any story. So again, as another final example, take Alphabet. The reason why Google kind of christened itself to Alphabet was basically to separate out their different lines of business, some of which again are foundational like search and advertising, to some of their more speculative businesses like self-driving cars. So what Google has done is something which is, I would say, terrible out of all of them from what I've heard. The rumor is that they're saying, and that's really what the news is out in the market, is they're going to lay off 6%. And they're saying we're going to be laying off 6% of our non-performing employees. I mean, many people in their LinkedIn write ex-Googler. I'm not sure they want to do this after this. Because the people who lost their jobs are being, we're saying to the world that these are non-performing employees. This is obviously much worse than what any other company has done. I mean, of course, Musk has fired everyone, but this is, the other places have at least fired their non-performing lines of business. And people know that the engineers are not responsible for the commercial aspects of their product. I mean, they build the product, they don't sell the product, and they don't decide that the product is going to be made. So that's fine. So Google or Alphabet, if you look at their balance sheets, they make money. Still make money. They make a shitload of money. They don't need to fire these guys. But they've shown a 27% drop in profits. And their growth, which I said is the most important number, is down from 41%. It used to be 41% and down to 6%. They're still growing, by the way. But they were going at 41%. And now they're down to 6%. So what happened was that one of their activist shareholders, they basically wrote a letter. That letter is in the public domain, and I've linked it from my post. Basically, pointing out to Sundar Pichai that, look, dear Sundar, it starts. You guys have too many people. You have grown at 20% every year. So this is an organization which increases by 20% every year. And your salaries are like 151% above what the salaries for the top 10 tech companies are, which also pay a lot. So you guys are, your salaries are way off the Richter in terms of what you guys pay. In your 20%, you've grown. Now, again, this is not this is not by lack of design. This is exactly what their corporate strategy was. In order to show Wall Street that, hey, I'm growing at 41% today, I'm going to keep growing at 41, forget 41, I'll grow at 50% tomorrow, I'll grow at 60%. In order to make that claim, they had to hire these guys. This 20% growth isn't accidental. It's not because, you know, somebody screwed up. No, this is their design. Their design is to show that they have the capability to support that growth. And in order to do that, they also need to show that we're hiring like really technically competent people. We're hiring the creme de la creme. So obviously the salaries were like that. So that's why their salaries are so skewed. This is all part of the game. And now obviously, since they cannot show their growth because the money is dried out because of interest rates. And because, of course, COVID is, we're on the trailing edge of COVID. So that demand, things are going back to pre-COVID world in terms of the way growth happened. So now they're having to let go 6% of their workforce. And again, it's come to the conclusion of this. Honestly, if you work in these places, you made a lot of money. In private industry, this is inevitable. This is part of what capitalism is. So it's not bad or it's not immoral. This is the way the world works. The only thing is you should be aware of the way the world works. Because again, as long as you're aware of the risk, you're reaping the rewards. That's fine for those of you who work in these companies. You get paid much more, what, 150% more than what everybody else gets paid. And you would say that, well, I'm better than them. That's fine. But are you 150% better than everybody else? I don't think so. But that's fine. You made money when the going was good. The only thing is you should have known what the risks were. And again, I'm not saying that these risks are very apparent for people